That's WOR News. Next news at 2. Bulletins at once. I'm Jeff Weiser on WOR News. And now the Joey Reynolds Show.
Joey Reynolds is here. Joey Reynolds is here. He'll be with you all night till dawn's early light. Joey Reynolds is here. Sit back, enjoy, and have fun. He's New York's number one. He'll talk to people you know and some you don't on his show. Joey Reynolds is here. He can be heard in L.A., Hawaii, they say. His best to them all. And pass the good word down along Broadway. Joe is having a ball. With him you never can tell. He's controversial as hell. He could be wrong, could be right. Fight. He's the man of the year. Yeah. Joey Reynolds is here. The Joey Reynolds Show.
I have to put on my Gene Shepherd hat and the kazoo and also the Jew's harp. We need the Jew's harp. We got to have a little of Gene Shepherd in us. You know, now, if you don't know who he is or who he was, he's gone now. But he won't ever be really gone because of the Christmas Story. I think that's probably the most famous thing. We see that every year on television. It was written by Gene Shepherd, and that was his voice describing that. You see it on TV every year. That's Gene Shepherd. Now, he used to have this show. He was on this station in New York doing this show when they wanted to punish him. And, you know, when he got rewarded, they put him on for 45 minutes at 10 at night. And that was a good thing, you know, when you when they take you off the all-night show and they put you on a better shift, they kind of honor you. Am I raising my voice for this one? That would be a Gene Shepherd move. We got game here tonight. We'll be right back. The Joey Reynolds Show live from New York, and we got Gene Shepherd's favorite fan here, Eugene Bergman, and he wrote a book called Excelsior, you fathead. We'll be right back.
You're listening to 710 WOR, real life, real people, real talk radio, and I'm Joey Reynolds.
So these days, also, we are living in the shadow of Gene Shepherd, and we are in a studio where he used to broadcast from at 1440 Broadway. We had several floors, and there was another configuration of rooms, but this particular room we're in, I have said this on the air before, and I'll mention it to the public because it's a very interesting story, is built on springs because they did not want the floor microphones to jiggle if there was any commotion in the hall or outside of the building. You hear absolutely nothing in this room. It's the totally best room to sleep in your life. We had Bernard Meltzer sleep here for years. What happens is you put the microphones on the floor and a band, and nothing moves because it's on springs. It's a very expensive studio. That's from when Howard Hughes owned this joint. And Tommy Dorsey's band and Frank Sinatra sang here, you know, that whole history of big shows that came from here. But Gene Shepherd was a guy who did this all-night show for a while. And then there was Long John and Barry Gray, I think, did 10 to 2 or something like that. And they put him on at 10 at night as a featured performer. I believe that's how it went. I'm going to ask an expert because I wasn't around for this. I was a rock and roller. Now, Eugene Bergman is here. Eugene, where are you from originally?
Well, I grew up in Richmond Hill, Queens.
All right.
Now I'm living on Long Island.
Oh, you made a big move. What, about 8 miles?
Well, we did it for the kids.
I see. So you grew up with Gene Shepherd on the radio. You're a young guy, so.
Well, I started listening in 1956 as a college sophomore. Somebody said to me, hey, there's a great guy that talks on the radio. You really got to listen to this guy. And I did, and I became hooked.
What was it that he was doing at the time? Was he doing the all-night show or the 10 o'clock?
He was doing the Sunday night show. He started a few minutes after 9 on Sunday evening, and he ran through 1 in the morning. And he did that from sometime in around August or September 1956 until sometime in 1960. So a few years he was doing Sunday nights.
So one night a week? That was it?
He was doing one night a week, but then he would also do a little bit other nights. But his five nights a week really started in 1960.
Yeah.
When he was on the air for 45 minutes in the middle of the evening from Monday through Friday. And then, of course, he was also for several years on Saturday nights live at the Limelight Cafe.
He was a one-of-a-kind, of course, and we still have so many good memories of everything he ever did. I mean, you can't help but forget, you can't help but remember his great storytelling and some of his antics. I was thinking that he was always clean. This is not a vulgar guy.
Nope. In fact, probably the worst thing he ever said on the air was, holy smokes.
Yeah. Interesting. In what respect to you? What was it that really caught your attention?
Well, I like to say that what he did was he tickled the better parts of your mind. He was intelligent. He was funny. It was as though he was having an intelligent conversation with you, say, in a bar at 3 a.m. or in a dorm late at night. You felt you were involved in a dialogue, and of course, it was his monologue, but he had that intimate feeling about him so that you felt that you were the lone guy that he was spilling it all out to.
Now, you have a book about him called Excelsior, You Fathead. Was Excelsior his expression?
That was his favorite expression, and people have asked me why I call the book that. Well, there are two reasons. One is the ideal reason, the other is the practical. Ideally, that was his phrase. Excelsior is kind of a Latin phrase that means onward and upward to victory. And he felt that you should strive, but if you were too idealistic, you were a fool or a fathead. So Excelsior, you fathead, sort of says, onward and upward, you fool.
Well, you know, Art Roberts used to be a disc jockey in Texas, and he moved on to Buffalo and Chicago. He was at WLS. He's been around the country. And Art was a big Texan who used to yell at the end of his show, Excelsior, y'all. And I'll bet he got it from Gene Shepard. I would bet. No, I didn't know the nucleus of it, but now I do.
Mm-hmm. And actually, probably the origin of the word Excelsior in terms of him using it is a poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow about an idealistic young fellow who goes up a mountainside in a blizzard carrying a banner that says Excelsior. And people say, oh, no, don't. You'll die up there. And he says, oh, but I must, Excelsior. And, of course, the next morning they find him frozen in the snow, but he's still holding high the banner that says Excelsior.
Man of La Mancha. So you got hooked on Gene Shepard as a kid.
A 19-year-old kid.
Yeah, well, you never tried to get your kids to like him, did you?
Well, I have, but I'll tell you, I have been talking about and obsessed with Gene Shepard for the last 4 or 5 years that my family is getting sick of hearing about it. However, I say in the dedication that I hope this book will help my family understand why I feel Shepard was such an important person and why he was so important to me.
Did you run Christmas Story off-season? That's the proof of your love.
In the beginning, I didn't care for it that much because I felt it was very different from his radio programs. The more I watch it, the more I love it.
Yeah, well,
it is hilarious.
He's a genius. Now, you know, I was visiting Hawaii. I did the show from Hawaii last month. I was a couple of days in Honolulu and the next time in Maui. The stations are owned by John Dett, who's very, very big Gene Shepherd fan. So he knows where this comes from, and he asked me if I knew Gene Shepherd. Or, I know what it was. I spotted something he had on his desk. It was a Gene Shepherd thing when he came in the night I was in Maui doing the remote. And he said, do you have any Gene Shepherd tapes? So I was scrambling around. Of course, I had done the salute after he had died, and we have all these tapes which we put together. Did you hear any of them?
Yes, I did.
And I'm going to send them over to John, but he's probably got his ear right against the radio as he did when Gene was on the air every night tonight. Because he owns the stations that we're on, and I'll bet tonight is of special interest. So tonight we have Eugene Bergman with us, or this morning. In Hawaii it's tonight. Excelsior, you fathead, the art and enigma of Gene Shepherd. Now, I don't want to know what an enigma is, but I got a real strong idea that it's got an intellectual base to it. We'll be right back on the Joey Reynolds Show, an enigma inside of a mystery, right? Isn't that what God is? We'll be right back. I'm the guy who keeps you up all night, Joey Reynolds on 710 WOR. I feel like Groucho Marx, and who do you trust? We have Eugene Bergman, and what is it you do for a living, Eugene?
Well, for 34...
Step up to the mic, and where's George Fenneman?
For 34 years, I designed exhibits at the Museum of Natural History in New York.
Now, will that be modern exhibits, or those that we don't use anymore?
Well, it was all kinds of scientific exhibits in every field you could think of. I even did a Star Trek memorabilia exhibit for the planetarium. I got to touch Mr. Spock's ear.
Wow. But you're not doing that anymore?
No, I retired a couple of years ago. And
why? They got tired of hearing about Gene Shepherd.
Well, I decided to take an early retirement and devote my life to several years of writing this book.
Which is called Excelsior, You Fathead, The Life Story of Gene Shepherd. Is it his life story?
Well, it has a biography in it. It has enough to satisfy inquiring minds. Yeah. About some of the darker things. But mainly it's a celebration of the extraordinary genius of Gene Shepherd in radio and other fields.
So we find a guy who's got the show business side and then he's got the real life.
Mm-hmm.
Did they mix?
Well, the strange thing about Shepherd was he appeared to his listeners to be telling them the real Gene Shepherd. This is what I am. And in some senses, it was some of his philosophy, his ideas, his gripes. But on the other hand, he also was keeping it quiet. His real life, he never really talked about. His biography, he kept very, very private. And some of the sad part of his life is how he treated some other people, including some members of his family. And that was part of the enigma. Here, this great guy that people thought of as a mentor could also be not quite as nice as you would like to think at times.
Yeah, he had a conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget, in that time period, too, let's bring that forward, we were a little more shame-based as a society, and divorce and troubles in families, we didn't really put we certainly didn't put them on the air. But you took and you put them privately in a community. It's a different world right now. I'm not saying it's good, it's just different. And, I mean, I talk openly about my addictions. I don't think Gene Shepherd would have done that. Back in those days, they didn't do that. No one was knowing it.
That's true. But I think he was a little bit more secretive than most. For example, several people I interviewed for the book told me that they knew Shepherd and they knew the actress Lois Nettleton. And for a considerable period of time, they didn't know that the two of them were married. So he even kept who he was married to secret from some of his close friends. It was amazing how he could keep those secrets and keep his self to himself.
Did you ever visit his show?
No, I didn't. I did get to meet him once when he had what was called a mill, where he would ask people to gather together. And basically all I did was say, would you sign this copy of I, Libertine, his hoax book, for me? And he said, sure, and he did.
Around the time of Ayn Rand?
Well, this was early 1957.
Yeah. So Atlas Shrugged and Fountainhead and all that business had come out, and I Libertine was what, his entire platform of social consciousness?
Actually, it does. It's sort of a play on social mores, yeah. But he basically had the idea of it. But most of the book was written by Theodore Sturgeon, the science fiction author.
Right.
Of course, the origin of this is that in the beginning, I, Libertine did not exist. He asked his fans to go out and request it in bookstores because he thought that people who believed in lists, such as bestseller lists, were foolish. So let's go out and create a book by a fictitious author, and let's confuse the booksellers. And it confused them for quite a while until eventually he and Sturgeon actually wrote the book.
And how is it?
It's kind of tough going. I haven't read it in in almost 50 years. The pages are brown, and I'm afraid to turn them. But it was about 18th century England, and it was sort of a modern sensibility set back a couple hundred years. So it had its amusing points.
So this is a guy who got on the air and talked about essentially whatever he wanted.
Yes.
Now, Herb Salzman was manager here during that time, I believe, right? Did you talk to Herbie?
Yes, I interviewed Herb Salzman. Herb was in the beginning, or many years in the early years of Shepherd, the guy who got the sponsors.
Right.
Then he became the general manager from around 1967 to 77, when just about the time that Shepherd left. So Herb Salzman got to know Shepherd very well.
And they went to go for a younger audience. That was part of it.
Yeah.
Well, they're paying a lot of money.
Well, it's interesting that in part, WOR decided to get rid of a few people who were talkers on the air for decades. Shepherd was one of them. And try to, I think, get a younger audience. At least that's the story.
Yeah. Well, that didn't work. All they did was make the old audience mad. No, it was a legendary station, and I still is. And, you know, I mean, we've been doing the same thing for so many years. This is the station that invented talk radio. And Gene Shepherd is one of the founders. I would say he had a style that was different than Long John, and everybody was unique. Bob and Ray were different. They maybe have been, all of them were convincingly brilliant and funny, but different. And then there were those who were just doctors on this station, too. There were a lot of those. It was an interesting time. Did you grew up with that? Weren't you a rock and roller ever?
Yes, actually, I feel lucky that I was listening to popular music before rock and roll, and then I began to hear it, and like many people, I thought it was terrible, and all of a sudden Elvis Presley came on the scene, and I was converted to rock and roll. That was around 1956.
Yeah, so what's with PBS? What are they running? Oldies tapes all weekend? That's what they're doing. They're fundraising now. They had the Elvis thing. No, they had the Mamas and Papas.
Well, they had the Mamas and the Papas. I was a big Mamas and the Papas fan.
Sure. Well, you're a snob. Mama Cass was singing Sing for Your Supper, and she's choked on a ham sandwich.
Well, that's the legend.
How inappropriate is that? And they played it the other night as if it was some great celebration. This is a woman singing for your supper, big as she was, and she died from it, her supper. You know, it wasn't the right thing to do, but I guess they got a lot of pledges. You know, Michelle Phillips was there. Did you see her?
I sure did.
She looked good?
She looked great.
Well, when I was inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I was there with Jerry Blavitt from Philadelphia, and Jerry kept hitting on Michelle Phillips. I saw Jerry last night, and I said, Jerry, you know, he produces these oldies things on PBS now. Plus, he's on the air in Philadelphia on radio. I said, Jerry, you know, you remember when we were at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Because last night we were with Seymour Stein, who was inducted tonight. And he said, yeah. And I said, you were hitting on Michelle Phillips. He says, yeah, and the Geeter went home with Michelle Phillips, too. So that part I didn't know. I said, you went up with her. The mamas and the papas. But she was separated from John at the time. Although last night she was, or the night before, she was talking about all the great times with John Phillips. You know, a lot of this is show business garbage. And you put it on the air because you want to sell something. You know, people will do anything to sell, to make money anymore. They'll tell a sack of lies just to get you to open your wallet and pull out your credit card. And you know, if I didn't live through about 40 years of this crap, I probably wouldn't be so dangerous. But you know what I mean? You walk around in life and you say, okay, wait a minute. Am I going to be the disillusionment committee head? Or am I going to just be an honest guy to myself and let everybody else be as foolish as they want to dance? What is it that you choose? In my case, I guess I'm the Yenta. No, you know, there's a great love for Gene Shepherd and many of the people, by many of the people who are touched by his stories, and they're professional people in all walks of life, CEOs, other writers, people in broadcasting who were inspired by him, because he was one of those guys who had a great understanding of how to use the gift of communication and imagination. And he would sit here and he could make a story out of anything and use his imagination and dance around. He was as good as Bill Clinton. This is a guy who knew how to tell stories and get people caught up in them. Now, there's a few people on the planet who are like this. Am I right or wrong?
Very few.
Well, who do you compare him to?
Well, Shepherd, from what I am told, was very upset because Garrison Keillor got so much publicity and became so well known. And Shepherd felt that he should have gotten that kind of renown. So there is some similarity, but they're really quite different. Garrison Keillor is basically scripted. I mean, he writes his stuff from what he says, what I've read about his comments. And then I guess he sort of memorizes it, and then he tells it.
Yeah.
Well, this is not what Gene Shepherd did.
No.
Gene Shepherd just came out with it off the top of his head.
Well, I have the same issue with Howard Stern, because I was the first of those shock guys, and I didn't get the rewards that you get from management, who gave him more money and fired me. So you kind of get a resentment, and you'll work through it if you have half a brain, which is about all you have left anyway. But there's a real hard time in being a success to yourself. You know, I always knew I was good, and I always knew that people liked me. And there was a guy named Fred Clustine in Buffalo who passed away, and he said years ago, he says, you know, it's going to say on your tombstone, nobody liked you but the people. And that's the deal. You know, I was never a management darling, and I never found a godfather. And Gene Shepherd was the same thing, I believe, in that he was disenfranchised from the game. You know, the game is to really have these guys use you as a commodity. And if you don't mind being a pork belly, if I sound a little cynical, then you'll go a long way, because that's what it's all about. You know, you really got to have a relationship with somebody. And in the earlier days, I was too arrogant to have that, and I think Gene probably was that way too.
Can I quote Barry Farber?
Yeah.
I
love Barry. It's
Barry Farber was a good friend of Shepherd's. They were on WOR at the same time.
Right.
And Farber said to me, you know, if Gene had only once in a while smiled at one of the administrators, if he didn't have to laugh at that jokes, but if he just, you know, went along a little bit, he could have gone so much further, but he wouldn't do it. And Farber couldn't understand why Gene wouldn't bend the slightest bit. He had his own mindset, and he was just going to do what he wanted to do.
I understand this for some reason. You're not going to ask me which side I take, are you? I love Gene Shepherd and I love Barry Farber for different reasons. But I think that Gene didn't want to kiss anybody's ass, and I think that's okay. I was the same way. And I nailed my shoes to the door, and I said, fill these, you a-holes, when I got fired. So I had the arrogance. But all I'm sorry for is it was the wrong door. That guy became the president of ABC.
You schmuck!
We'll be right back. The Joey Reynolds Show, live from New York. We got a book called Excelsior, You Fathead, The Life Story of Gene Shepherd, kind of. But it's a lot of things about him, and Eugene Bergman spent several years putting this together, and he's really done a great job. We'll be right back.
Real life, real people, real talk radio. This is 710 WOR, and I'm Joey Reynolds.
All right, we're on the air live from New York on WOR, is the host station in New York, run all over the country, of course. And one of my thrills tonight is to have Eugene Bergman, who is a Gene Shepherd. Can we call you an expert?
Well, I suppose I'm one of them.
Well,
I'm the only one who's written the book.
I'm going to take something out of the Excelsior book. Most who are familiar with Shepherd's work admire his ability to remember. They think he remembered the details of what happened in all the stories he told, but what was truly extraordinary was his ability to remember so many bits and pieces from the past and the present, which made his monologues seem real, although their detail, through detail. Actually, remembering was not a simple act with Gene Shepherd. It was a major tool of his creativity. Do you ever have the feeling that half the stuff you remember just didn't exist at all? This is him, right?
This is Shepherd talking, yeah.
That you were sort of... why don't you read that part? Because you sound more like him. You got that New York thing here, which he has, that little nice, intimate voice at the end. Read the Gene Shepherd piece there.
Right. Well, this is a transcription from one of his broadcasts. Do you ever have the feeling that half the stuff you remember just didn't exist at all? That you sort of made it up? And here, more than in a lot of cases, he's obviously talking to personnel in the control room. Although, you know, sometimes he talked to people in the control room at the same time that he was obviously talking to all his thousands of listeners. Or in some nutty way, you mean you don't have that problem ever, Herb? This is, he's talking to Herb Squire, his engineer. You mean you really believe that everything you remember actually happened? Well, this seems to say a lot about Gene Shepherd and his fame for remembering. You know, he's admitting there that some of the stuff that he, quote, remembered maybe never even happened, which is absolutely true. He created it out of his own mind. It didn't necessarily really happen the way he told it.
When you went to see his appearances, when you went to see him in person, were they like-minded as you?
Well, people, just about everybody. It's interesting that people would think that they were the only person who knew and listened to Gene Shepherd.
Right.
So they'd be amazed to see these crowds of people. Why, my goodness, all these people listen to Gene Shepherd, too? I'm not the only one.
Well, the intimacy was great.
There was that sense of one-on-one.
Nighttime made it happen too.
Yes, the
magic.
The magic. The slowed down pace of human life.
No arguing.
Mm-hmm.
No records.
Right. Just sort of musing on whatever happened to pass through your mind, and that was what was great. He got you to muse along with him.
And you hope that there's someone will do this again one day.
Mm-hmm.
Young people who are inspired enough to take this medium and work with it. I am so encouraged by the Broadway people who are, the kids who are off Broadway, who are strikingly talented, and they have this desire, it's a passion, to come on strong in a gift. And they become the Excelsior. They're the ones that hold the flag and climb the mountain and get, maybe don't make the snow, but you know, but the flag is there. It's an interesting journey, and I applaud the stand-up comics who are standing up still, because there are so many of them who were robbed by sitcoms, and now we have a flock of stand-up comics again. The radio stations, after we get through with this conglomerate ownership, when it comes down to little people owning again, or lesser people, then maybe we'll have more intimacy. We'll have more of a sense of each other from common folks who have extraordinary talent. And that's the great hope I have. Because, you know, when you get a little older, you start to teach. You know that. We get foolish and teach. You know that. I got past the money part. I know I'm not going to be the millionaire now. I'm not going to be the billionaire. A million is nothing now. But I'm not going to be the billionaire of the generation. I just saw the Fortune magazine today. Or it was Forbes. And they've got the new billionaires. Have you seen the list? They put out an extra edition. There's so many new ones. Are you in there? Gene was unhappy with this station and with this job, wasn't he?
Well, you know, he started to do an awful lot of other things in other media. And he felt that he was not getting the respect and the renown that he felt was his due. And the combination of not getting the respect that he felt he should have had and his desire to spread out in other directions, I think, combined to, shall we say, make him a bit disgruntled after 21 years.
So where did he go?
Well, one of the main thing places he went was into television. He did a couple of television series. He did a really wonderful series called Gene Shepherd's America.
I had one of those shows. They're 15 minutes, right?
Half hour.
Mm-hmm. Half hour?
Yeah. Television shows where he would just go off with a small production crew to any place in the United States where he thought there would be something interesting, something that caught his imagination. And many of these were done extemporaneously, just the way his radio shows were.
Who archives all of this?
Well, these were done by WGBH in Boston. There are several people who distribute the audios of over 1,000 of his broadcasts. One of them is Max Schmid at WBAI, Schmid Co.
How about the guy who helped me here in New York?
There's a guy, I don't know who you're referring to, but there's Jeff Beauchamp of the Gene Shepherd Project. He distributes audios also.
Who else?
And there's the guy who has a fantastic website called Flick Lives.
And who's that?
That's Jim Clavin.
And it's just called FlickLives.com?
That's correct.
So we should buy your book.
I hope so.
Spent several years on it. You're great. You're going to come back again?
I'd love to.
You come back, we'll play tapes.
Great.
Let's do that. Why don't we get some sound and we'll play tapes, all right? Let's do this right. Eugene Bergman, author of Excelsior, You Fathead. Buy the book, Excelsior, You Fathead. Gene Shepherd lives in our hearts.